Jimmy, Jimmy Crane, Jimmy Crane's a nerd. Jimmy Crane's an improv nerd. Jimmy Crane's a nerd.
Hey everybody, this is Jimmy Crane, and you're listening to another episode of Improv Nerd, and we're sponsored by the National Improv Network. It's an online resource by improvisers for improvisers. It's free to join. Just make a personal profile, a troupe profile, and submit to festivals with the click of a button. Join the network and get connected with theaters and festivals and improvisers from around the country. If you're a festival looking to run submissions, we can help with that too. It's the ultimate free resource for anyone in the improv world. Get connected today. For more information, visit nationalimprovnetwork.com. That's nationalimprovnetwork.com. We're also sponsored by the Charm City Comedy Festival. And this spring, I want you to mark your calendar for the Charm City Comedy Festival. It's taking place April 30th through May 3rd in beautiful Baltimore, Maryland. Last year, this festival featured 73 acts in improv, stand-up, and sketch. And this year's festival is scheduled to be even bigger. Plus, don't miss workshops from the New Movement Theater, Second City, the Magnet Theater, and more. Submissions are open now through March 15th, so you don't have much time. Submit your acts today. For more information, please visit CharmCityComedyFestival.com. That's CharmCityComedyFestival.com. We have a great show for you today. Our guest today is Amy Gorelick. Amy is a hugely respected teacher, director, coach, producer, and improviser living in New York City. She's dedicated her life to this art form, teaching 7 days a week. Amy is someone who makes things happen. We talked to her about starting out at the UCB and making a Herald team and then getting cut. Why Crump, the long-form improv show, is so special to her, and all the famous people she's worked with over the years in New York City. Now, before we get to the episode with Amy, I just want to say I haven't talked about this in a while, about Lauren and I trying to get pregnant, because we've taken two months off. Because Lauren had a thyroid problem. But we were still having sex, just not trying to have a baby, which I've learned are two different things. And now we are back to baby-making mode. It's official, which means that Lauren is back on fertility treatment. And since this was our fourth try, she is no longer taking Clomid, which was a pill. She is now having to give herself injections, shots, and taking a lot of prenatal vitamins and doing acupuncture. Now, for me, for the guy, nothing's changed. It's the same thing. All I have to do is jizz in a cup. So yesterday was the day we had to go to the fertility doctor to make a baby. And you have to be there early in the morning, between 6 and 9 a.m., because apparently most people who want to have a baby and go to a fertility doctor are responsible people, and they have 9 to 5 jobs. So I got up in the morning, and I did my part, thanks to my wife, and I did my part in the plastic cup that they provide. And I always put way too much pressure on me, and it's never enjoyable. And this time, I felt like I didn't jizz enough in the cup. And I tried to get a little more out, but it wasn't working. And I started to obsess, like, oh my God, there's not enough jizz in the cup. So I didn't want to say anything to my wife because I didn't want to freak her out, even though I was totally freaking out, which was totally stupid on my part because I just shut down. I stopped talking. So I put the plastic cup into the little brown paper lunch bag, like, you know, when we had kids and we had to take our lunch to school. I call it the love sack. And I get in the car, and I'm still, like, you know, I'm still freaked out and filled with anxiety. And I'm like, let's not talk. Let's just turn on the radio. Let's just listen to news radio and not talk. And it's a 45-minute drive. So we finally get there to the doctor's office, and, you know, I can hardly wait to see Terry, who is the lab technician. And Terry is this big guy, and he looks like he's played college football maybe like 5 or 6 years ago, and not like a complicated position, like an offensive lineman, like, Terry, block, okay, got it. So And he's wearing this long lab coat, long doctor's lab coat. And I have this theory, like, anybody who wears a long doctor's lab coat, they're like, you know, like, they could be a doctor. But for some reason, the way Terry wears it, he looks like a butcher. So I give him the bag, and he takes me back to the lab slash lunchroom, and I take the cup out of the bag, and I put it on top of the refrigerator, and I'm like, Terry, do you think there's enough in here? And he just kind of like, and they're like totally over it, you know, like nothing can faze them, nothing's going to throw him. He kind of just glances at it, and he's like, yeah, it's fine. Just like he worked at Radio Shack or something. So I'm totally relieved. It really helps. It frees up my anxiety. And we go ahead and we do the insemination. And on the way home, I'm talking to my wife. And she says to me, you know, I'm like, oh, my God, this is so stressful. And she goes, oh, my God. She says, you know what? Thank God, all you have to do is a really small part because you can't handle the stress. And it's a very important part, you know, if you think about it, because without my contribution, there'd be no baby. But my wife is absolutely right. Here it is, the Amy Gorelick episode. Enjoy.
Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd, oh yeah.
Hi, Kristen.
It kind of has a Jerry Springerfield to it, doesn't it?
Yeah, no table, your red table.
I don't have my red table. I don't have my glasses behind me, the big improv nerd glasses. So let's start with you, all right?
Okay.
Is this too far away from you guys? I feel like, no? You're okay with this? Okay. For the podcast, I feel like we're too far from the audience, but that's just me. I'm a perfectionist and a control freak. Okay, so you grew up in New Hampshire, and you first got introduced to improv when you were studying acting at college at Humboldt State University. Tell us how you were first exposed to improv.
My teacher had gone to Chicago and took a workshop with Del and then brought it back to us.
But Del Close.
Yes, and he had studied the Herald, but he came back and he did like a exercise with us where he was like, you're the doctor. You're the patient. You have a problem. Blah, blah. And, you know, and he, like, laid out the whole law for us. So it wasn't really like we were improvising, but it still felt like we weren't. So.
What did you like about that?
Writing my own stuff. I hated plays.
Because you had done, like, serious plays up until that point,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, so what was the freedom of, like, getting to say your own words?
There was something inside of me that was like, these plays are boring. Like, I don't understand why they're classics. I don't understand why people keep doing them. I thought I was kind of an asshole about it, but then I realized like, oh no, there's something else out there. So I was like, oh, I can write my own stuff. Great.
So then you moved to New York City and you start studying at the UCB back in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
Your level class was where you met a lot of great people, and you formed a group, an independent team called Crumpt.
Crumpf.
Crumpt.
Crumpf.
How is that pronounced?
K-R-O-M-P-F.
And
Crumpf.
Okay. Tell me a little about what made that team so special.
Well, first of all, it has Joe Wenger and Neil Casey and Ryan Carles, who if you are in the New York improv community and LA now, they're bigwigs, you know. We were just best friends right away. We lived together, except for Ryan. Ryan lived somewhere else, but we lived together. We had all of our classes together.
Anyone like date each other or hook up? Any sexual stuff
God.
Going on? Because I've always found that always is that can really make an improv team strong.
Yeah, actually, we didn't talk about this, but yeah, a lot of people actually are always curious about that. And yes, I dated two of the boys out of three from Crom.
So were you like in the group and like dated one of them, then broke up, and then dated the other ones?
It was all very secretive.
Why?
Because we thought it would mess up the dynamic of the team.
Like,
so
no one could figure it out.
Yeah. Well, the first person I dated was Ryan Carles. And
you're blushing when you say that.
Yeah.
Why?
Just because we run a weekly show together still, and he's, like, one of my best friends. But we could never get to, like, that next level. So we just, it was like friends that kissed in bed.
So that's as far, that's as far as you got.
Pretty much, yeah.
And then who was the other guy in the group?
Oh, man, this is a big old secret. This was a period of my life where I was dating, like, four guys at once, but they all knew about it. They all knew about it.
How do they all... How do How do they all know about it?
Because I told them all. I was like, this, I'm trying this thing. I'm going to date a bunch of people. That's what I was dating Neil Casey in secret.
And then you guys broke up.
Yeah, we did because he didn't like that I was dating other people. And then he started dating somebody who is also somewhat kind of B-level celebrity right now.
Who was that?
Julie Klausner.
Okay.
Damn it, Jimmy.
All right. I'm good, aren't I?
Yes.
I don't even have to work at it. So when those things happened, mm-hmm. how does the group, get over it? You know, like, because I would imagine there's some tension after you break up and stuff like that. How do you, persevere? Because you guys have been, you're still technically together.
Yeah. Well, Ryan and I were on a Harold team at the time together, so that's why it was secret, because we weren't supposed to date each other on Harold teams.
That was like a UCB rule?
It was kind of like an unwritten rule,
okay.
Yeah.
But in the bathroom? Did they write it in the bathroom?
Yeah.
Where was the rule?
It was just, people said don't date team members.
Right.
Smart idea.
Do you think that's a good idea?
Yes.
Okay, and why?
Because I think you need to be able to keep those relationships separate.
And if you look back at the many people that you dated, would you have done it differently?
No, because I actually didn't date that many people in the community. After I had my run of the few people I wanted to date, I was done. I was like, I'm good. Yeah.
Tell us a little about the form you guys created.
It was what you guys watched the Fart Police do. So we took took the Herald and we just kind of converted it. So instead of seeing all the beats separated, you would see all of the tiny beats up top. And then we would do a tag run to kind of show the audience how to watch improv. Like, you just saw four different scenes. Now you're going to see a fifth one that looks exactly the same, but a tag run. So you get to see how all our minds work.
So for people that don't know tag runs, because as you know, the language keeps changing and evolving in improv, what does a tag run mean?
A tag run means you come into the scene, tag someone out, and continue that person's behavior, put them in maybe an analogous situation so they can show that behavior again.
So give us a little example. From what we just saw.
Right. So our tag run was Adam threatening people with knives. So we just put him in worse and worse situations. Yeah, where it'd be inappropriate for him to be.
So what was the next heightening or the next scene that we would have seen?
James did something, right? Oops, I'm messing up. I know, I came back in and did doctor's office, like the herpes, like don't threaten me. And then James did the at the police station. So it's like he's threatening him as he's being interrogated with the knife that he used.
So you were at UCB during a time when improv was exploding. And you told me you were an intern, right?
Yeah.
So you must have seen some just crazy stuff back in 2001.
Yeah.
What's like the craziest thing you saw there?
Oh, God. There's so many crazy stories. I think ones that people would appreciate was like Zach Woods was originally on Kronf when he was 15. And
for people who don't know Zach Woods.
Yeah.
He
was on Veep. He was on The Office. He was on Tall, Lanky Guy. And when he was on Kronf, he was really young and he had stage fright. So he eventually took classes and became the Zach Woods we all know. I think it was the first El Close Marathon we did, and it was at the old space. So we didn't have a formal green room. We would go down in this gross basement that had sawdust everywhere. I think it was 8 in the morning after we had done our show. Ryan and I went downstairs, and Zach Woods was sleeping in a huddled ball on just a bunch of trash. That was crazy.
And then there's a lot of celebrities that would come by, like you said, Robin Williams and Myers.
Yeah.
And what was that like?
Well, I wasn't easily starstruck because I was doing the bar on ASCAT all the time, but it would always surprise me who I would be starstruck by. So I think the weirdest one was Topher Grace.
From the 70s show.
Yeah, he was just talking at me as I'm collecting shirts to sell, and he was asking me, oh, when are the actors? Can we go in the back? And, I'm not even looking. I'm like, no, you got to go upstairs like everyone else and just wait for them to come out. And I look up, and there's Topher Grace. I'm like, oh, what is that? You can go in the back. And he was just like, no, I'll wait upstairs.
And what about Mike Myers?
Mike Myers was, I didn't think I would be starstruck by him, but then I was going in the back with beers, and it was just me and him in the hallway. And he goes, you're going to the bar with us, right? And I just went,
And so you went to the bar with him?
No.
Okay.
No.
Did people ever, like, pull you aside and tell you things and reveal stuff? And
always. Every day. Daily. Yes.
I don't want to go into names unless you're comfortable with it. What kind of stuff would they confide in you about?
I don't know. There was just something about... just to put this in perspective, too, it was 2001. Amy had just gotten hired for SNL.
Amy Poehler.
And I, at the time, had my hair exactly like hers. And we kind of, like, were the same height. And people would walk in, and they'd see me and get really excited and then realize I wasn't Amy Poehler. But it was like, people were just starting to come back to the theater. Or they would expect to see her, and she was kind of gone. So I think I got a lot of love because people were like, oh, you make me feel nostalgic for her.
But do people, is part of one of your, like, gifts that people feel, like, comfortable and want to reveal stuff to
you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I have a lot of secrets inside of me.
Do you ever let them out?
No, I mean, no. I'm waiting for my tell-all book to do that. No, everyone's like, oh, boy. Yeah.
Also, you were there around 2001 where it kind of exploded in terms of we had the UCB, then Ali Farinakian leaves to start the Pit, and then eventually Armando leaves the Pit to start the Magnet. What were those times like?
It was interesting just because I, you know, I don't know how much of this I want to get into, but... yeah, I was like the intern that would do anything, so I kind of got roped into that whole process. And then quickly Armando was just like, do you want a life at UCB? And I was like, yeah, of course. And he's like, then stop working with me and Ollie right now. And I was like,
Armando
okay.
Diaz said that to you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And he was right. I mean, I did. There was still backlash from it, but like...
What kind of backlash?
Trust issues. I think certain people had trust issues with me then because they were just like, well, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to steal teachers? And I was just a 25-year-old that was excited there was going to be more improv in the city. That was all. That was it.
And you get on a Herald team at the UCB, right?
Yeah.
And then quickly, right? And then you get off a Herald team.
Yeah, our whole team got disbanded.
What was that like to get it, your team being disbanded?
It was sad. I cried on the phone with our AD.
Assistant director?
The AD of the theater, Owen Burke. He let me talk for a really long time, but I just cried at my 9-to-5.
And then at this point, do you go, I want to get back on a Herald team?
No, not right away. I was kind of sitting on my sadness for a while.
And how did you overcome that sadness?
I went back and auditioned. And I was like, I'm just going to try to get back in the game.
And so you auditioned, and how many times did you audition?
Just that once. I got called back. I didn't make it. And then I just auditioned again like 3 years ago.
And what happened?
There was 9 people in the room, so I immediately assumed that I was just being called in as kind of like a, here you go, here's a little accolade.
Is that something that you still want to do, is be on a Herald team at the UCB?
No.
How'd you get over letting go of that?
I realized that it wasn't as important as everyone makes it out to be.
What does everyone make it out to be in terms of importance?
Validation. Once they get on a team, they're funny, and they have a place to perform and a place for people to come, and they have that stamp on their resume that says, I was on a UCB Herald team, so I'm awesome, you know?
And you also didn't, you don't teach there, right?
No.
Okay. Is that something that you wanted to do?
Yes.
And what happened?
I co-taught a documentary class with Billy Merritt, and I could assume all I want about what happened, but I think pretty much he decided that I wouldn't be a good fit for the theater and kind of relayed that information, and then I was never asked to be a teacher.
Is it, because I'm, you know, I taught at the institutions in Chicago, Second City, IO, Annoyance. I'm an independent teacher. what advantage is it to be an independent teacher?
Money.
Now, you say that. Can you explain a little more?
Yeah, most theaters take 50% of whatever the class is. And then besides that, they have to pay rental fees. And then they pay their teachers on average $75 to $150 a class, which, you know, I think that's fine. But I work really hard with my students. I go beyond teaching them the form. I teach them how to be better improvisers as themselves.
What is your philosophy? You just said teaching them how to be more themselves. Can you explain your philosophy?
A little bit. I think I'm always into new things. So I would say my kind of like base thing is making sure everybody is a good actor. They're being realistic. I'm not a huge fan of blue humor, but that comes from Kronf. Like, we were never blue. So I enjoy that. I like going to fantasy lands. I like exploring things normal people wouldn't see every day because that's what they want to see on stage. But being realistic about it, you know? I'd rather see a scene about two dragons talking about their paying their bills, you know, than two roommates talking about paying their bills. You have the same conversation.
Now, you also had a lot of opportunities. You did a pilot with Tina Fey and Amy Poehler.
Yep.
For MTV. Mm-hmm. And the guys from the state. What was that experience like?
Good. It was VH1. It was awesome because I was like just I was a part of that kind of like low end crowd where they
low end.
Yeah. I was
Explain.
Like, because I wasn't like a star in that. Like, okay. They were the stars, and I was just like me and Ben Schwartz. Like, we played the background kids on stage, you know. But it was amazing.
And what did you learn from just being around Amy Poehler and Tina Fey?
I learned that confidence is 90% of everything in this business.
And you know, you hear that, but how does someone get it?
How do you get confidence? You have to fake it, I think, for a while until you believe it yourself.
Where are you in terms of confidence?
I think a good gauge is, like, I didn't start laughing at videos of myself until, like, a year ago. Like, I would watch it and be like, oh, God, I hate myself. I'm so not funny.
Are you hard on yourself?
Yeah. Oh,
in
yeah.
In what way?
Because I feel like now I'm in a place where I've done improv for so long, I want to start, like, having a message to my improv. Like, not, like, full-on satire necessarily. Like, still have fun and be silly, but...
If you want to do a message, why not do sketch? Why not do stand-up?
I could do that, I guess. I don't know. I like working with people. I found the magic of building a scene with someone else maybe too late in my improv career.
What do you mean by that?
Like 4 years in, I realized like, oh, you could build a scene with somebody?
What were you doing the first 4 years?
Just being and responding and reacting and, you
and
know.
More worried about getting the laughs and stuff
no,
like that?
No, never worried about getting the laughs.
You never worried about getting laughs when
no,
you started
No, because
out.
I didn't understand why I was getting laughs. Like, Armando would be like, I would, like, look at him in level one. Like, I didn't know why he was laughing at me. Didn't get it.
Did you not think you were a funny person ever?
No, I thought I was a funny person, but I didn't understand why the laughs were hitting at the points they were.
And then how did you figure that out then?
Learning game. Level two with Delaney, Michael Delaney.
Okay. And explain your understanding of game.
I think it's best described to kind of like lower level improvisers. And what I mean by that is your first couple years, so not lower, just or less than, behavior. What's the core behavior? What's happening? If a doorbell rings and somebody always goes, eek, you know, like that's the simple base game. Now let's put them in any situation we can where a bell rings so we can get them to do that eek and let's grow it. Let's make it bigger each time.
We're going to improvise now.
Oh my gosh, ready? Already? Okay.
Yeah, well, do you want me to ask you some more questions?
No,
we can ask some more questions if you'd like.
We can. Is there any celebrity you want some gossip on?
This is like Christmas for
I
me
know.
Right now. I'll throw some names out and then you decide. Andy Daly.
Andy Daly, he was just like a ghost at UCB. He would come in and come out. He had his own life going on.
Bobby Moynihan.
Bobby Moynihan. Really good friend of mine. I actually, he did, I was just telling you this backstage, he did his SNL audition for me by himself, just me and him in the back hallway, because we were both smokers, and he was like, come out, let me do my audition for you before I do it for Lauren in the next 15 minutes. And I was like, okay, and watched him do his audition.
Matt Besser.
Matt Besser. Pass.
Okay. Matt Walsh.
Matt Walsh, probably the nicest man in the world. Got so close to him, I got so close to him that I was just waiting for that moment where he gave me the mug from his dad's company, and I finally, when I got it, I was like, yes, yes!
Is it Taft Construction?
Yeah, the Taft okay. mug, yeah.
Ian Roberts.
Ian Roberts. He knew me before I knew him, in a sense. Like, I knew of him, and he was so great, but I took a character class with him, and he was like, who does characters here? Who does characters? Oh, Amy Gerlich, get up, you do characters. I was like, what? He knows I do characters? And, like, had me come up on stage. And he was like, yeah, just do something. Do one of your stock characters. I'm like, that's not how it works.
Amy Poehler.
Amy Poehler, awesome. Introduced her to, I introduced her to Bobby Moynihan. She didn't even know him. He was working at our theater. But I introduced her and introduced her to a celebrity boyfriend I had who he then put her in his movie.
Celebrity boyfriend was?
Should I say it?
Yeah.
Kyle Gass.
Okay.
Yeah.
I am so glad that I don't know some of these people's names. I'm like, you know what? Go ahead, Amy, reveal it. Rob Riggle.
Rob Riggle, the most amazing man in the world. I would see him in Central Park, and he would like scream my name from across the park. And I just
how
like,
did that make you feel when they did that?
Awesome. Because he was still like a normal dude.
You know, and I've asked other people who have been associated with the UCB, why do you think there's, in such a short period of time, so many people coming out of that place that have made their mark in comedy?
Well, I think it originally was there's a place to go where there's funny people. People gravitated towards that kind of strange comedy they saw on Comedy Central from their show. And it was a lot of actors and a lot of just people that were funny. And they just built up for 3 years, and then they all kind of got tons of PR and tons of people coming in.
The people that come out of there, yeah. Why are they so prepared to do well in show business?
We're disciplined. They also put like a little bit of fear in us, which I think is smart. Because if you're going into this business, it's never going to get any better.
Talk about the discipline part.
The discipline is don't rest on your laurels. Like you get the best day of getting on a Herald team is your first day. Then after that, it's scary as hell. It's 6 months. You got 6 months to impress us. You know, it's like, we'll be watching you.
Does that help the work?
I don't know if it helps the work because you're so excited to get on a team. And then you're desperate to make it work all the time. So I don't know if it helps the work. It helps you with the mindset that you need to be in the entertainment business.
Now, when I, a lot of times, I'm a teacher. I've been a teacher for a long time. And then you see students go on, right? And I'm sure you've seen tons of your students go on. And they don't consider you for like, oh, if they become, they've got a movie or something. They think of us as teachers.
Sure.
Do you think that's true?
Yeah. I don't mind that, though.
What is it that you'd like to do?
What I'm doing right now.
Which is?
Well, on this stage with you doing Improv Nerd Podcast.
Now, you said to me, this was like... You said to me, like, this is being... like being.
I said, this is my SNL.
Well, how could you explain that?
Are you kidding me? I told you, once I saw Kevin Mulaney teaching my level 3 improv, that's when I decided I wanted to teach. I was like, I want to teach this.
And what was it like? Because I know in Chicago in the 80s, if you said you wanted to teach, people would roll their eyes. Like you would just like.
Oh, I never told anyone.
You never told it? Why didn't you tell anybody?
No, I mean, I came
was
from.
Was it shame?
I was just like, how will I ever teach?
Like you didn't think you were good enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when did you get the courage up? When did that change?
When people started asking me to do it, they're like, can we put a group of people together and you teach us the Groff? And I was like, okay, I guess.
And how long did it take you to be like, you know what, I'm pretty good at this?
I don't know, when people kept taking my classes. maybe 3 years ago when I started like teaching weird classes, like improv therapy. I teach an improv therapy
class.
Tell
me about that class.
Oh my gosh. Well, I've never been to therapy.
And you're teaching improv therapy? They should take your license away, Amy.
I'm a doctor, Jimmy. Right. No, I was very upfront with everybody. Like, I don't know what I'm doing other than I've researched three different ways of therapy, and I think that it's really telling that if you have bad behavior, it makes for a great improv scene. So I'd be like, let's do a bad behavior, like magnifying something. So it's like, oh my God, there's a stain on that coffee table. My life is ending. Like, not a normal reaction, right? But could be a hilarious improv scene. Then I would have them do, okay, let's pretend like you're a normal functioning human being that doesn't get freaked out by a stain. We'd do that scene, it would go great, but it would be boring. You know, it'd be like, well, the stain, let's watch TV, you know?
So what did you learn from that process?
I learned a ton about myself. I learned people are way too honest because I would ask them to fill out questionnaires about when it was the moment they thought they had a problem. And I was just like, whoa.
Like what kind of stuff did you get on those questionnaires?
Oh, some guy, well, a lot of people's family members who have died. A lot of parents who had died. Which
suicide?
All kinds of stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. And then this one guy had a Russian bride and like didn't feel like he was in love with her and she was in love with him and... Oh, just a lot of weird personal stuff. And I had to pretend like I didn't know it when I'd go back in class. I'd be like, let's get up. You know?
Okay, I think we're ready to improvise.
Okay.
Now. Okay. Are you guys excited about that?
Yeah!
Are you? Okay, so I turn it over to the guest.
Right.
What would you like to do?
Here's what I like to do, because I've listened to how you do this.
Okay.
I would love to just get a random suggestion.
Okay.
We talk about it, but then after that, let's get a new one and just start.
Okay, great.
You're okay with that?
You're the guest.
I love
okay.
it.
Okay, so could we have a suggestion?
Maze.
So maze. You hear maze, and how does your mind work?
I went right to corn, and then I went to corn maze, and then I thought about... growing up in New Hampshire and how Halloween was like such a festive thing. And
great. So how would you use that to start a scene?
I don't know. I'd probably be one of six high school kids that is going on this hayride that really just wants to like bone somebody.
Okay, so you'd go right into character, right into environment.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so now we're going to take another suggestion.
Great.
We're going to go right into it.
I love it.
Great. Now, Mark, we don't have to use these handhelds, right, to improvise, or should we? Should we use them, or?
We just have to be close to the front mics, right?
Right. Okay. This is way inside baseball if you're listening to the podcast right now. We're on a stage. We have handheld mics, which I've never had, which is great. And then we also have stage mics, yeah, which is awesome. So we'll just put the mics down, right, and we'll go into improv. Okay, so what we need is I do like to hear my voice on a microphone. Do you?
Do you?
Kind of nice, yeah. Could we have a suggestion?
Chameleon.
Chameleon. Great, thank you.
Gretchen, what?
I want to touch your dress.
Oh, fine, but you have to sit down and eat with the rest of the attendants.
That is so sore.
I know.
You look beautiful. You really do.
Thank you. You look beautiful.
Well, thank you.
Let's just make sure your robe
thank
is tied
you,
up.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank
let's pull
you.
These up.
Thank you.
There we go. All right. Okay, look at you. You look like a princess.
Thank you.
Look at you.
Yes. You look more beautiful than I do. I don't want to go out there. Because everyone's going to be staring at you. I know you're the bride, but still, everyone's going to be staring at you.
No.
Yes.
No, I think everyone's going to be staring at you because you're out of your hospital bed and you're trying to come to the reception. So okay. Let's just go down together and I'll be like, ha ha ha. And then I'll sit and you can just mingle.
But everyone's going to stare at my scar.
Maybe.
Are you staring at it right now?
Well, you're just pointing it out.
Okay. I don't want to go.
All right. Do you want to just sit up here for a while?
Yeah, I'll just sit up here with you for a while.
Okay.
I hope I'm not ruining your special day.
No, why would you be ruining my special
day? Keith is such a nice guy.
Keith is such a nice guy, isn't he?
Yes.
He is. He's so... I can't even tell you. He...
Tell me.
All right, well... He was a Navy SEAL, and then he was a basketball player, and then he was an accountant. It's like he's just, like I feel like crushed. I feel crushed because I feel like I'm not good enough. Like I'm never going to be good enough or good or stuff. All I've done is hand modeling.
Oh, come over here.
Okay.
Let me give you a hug.
Oh.
You are good enough. You are so good enough.
Oh, thank you. You are too.
Thank you. I got you something.
What?
For your wedding, yes, I got you something.
You have no money. How did that happen?
I stole it.
Okay.
I went down to the gift shop.
No,
yes, from the gift shop? I was hooked up to my IV.
Oh, right? I'm sure you were very discreet.
I was discreet.
Okay.
They're like, oh, can I help you or whatever? And I got you this.
It's a cupcake.
Yes.
Half eaten. Fine. It's fine. But here's my point.
But you're not appreciating it.
No, here's my point.
No, whatever.
You're diabetic. You are diabetic. And this is what you were doing. You were hiding this cupcake.
I am type 2 diabetic.
That doesn't matter.
I can have a little of that if I walk around the hall, and that's what I did.
I don't think that's a real rule. I think this is a rule you're
Look it up on the internet.
Okay, I will, after my reception. I'm just feeling bloated. I will eat it.
Oh, you don't care.
I'm in my wedding dress.
I could have gone to jail for that.
I know. That lesson learned. Were you wearing your robe when you went down
there? Of course I did.
Right.
I could just grab it and stick things in it. I got some peanuts, too, I stole.
Oh, no.
Those aren't for you.
Okay. You know Jose that works down there?
Oh, Jose. I love Jose.
He likes you, too.
Does he?
He was talking to me
what
about
did he say?
The other day. He was asking me if you had a boyfriend.
Oh.
Isn't that exciting?
Yes. What'd you say?
I said, God, no.
Just like that?
Of course, you know, you're hospitalized in my...
You know what I think you're... I think you're jealous. Because I
Jose?
Could get Jose... Yes. I could get Jose and you could. He's
absolutely.
Not interested in you.
No, absolutely.
He's not interested in you. So
I know.
You just had to... I'm not even going to say that word. You just had to crap all over me.
So you didn't want to say the word crap? Or you were going to say...
Oh, don't change the subject, Holly. Don't change the subject on me. You've always been jealous of me. Even though I'm 30 years older than you, I still can get guys.
I know, and I think that's great. I'm fine with it.
Oh, sure you are.
I'm fine
sure.
with how
I
much
could...
you've done.
Let me tell you something. I slept with Kevin. Yeah, I slept with him.
What do you mean, like on the couch?
No, like we went all the way, as you kids say.
Oh, get come
I
off
hit a home
it.
Run with him. Yes,
come,
I did.
Come off it. You did not.
It was 6 weeks ago. Go ahead, eat the cupcake. Go ahead. You go ahead. When you're upset, you eat the cupcake.
You're telling me that my husband had sex with my 78-year-old aunt?
Yes, Holly, that's exactly what I'm saying. Because
mm-hmm.
he was coming on to me. Before I went in for my surgery, he was all over me.
That's disgusting. Before your skin surgery?
Yes. You know what he said to me? He's like, I like older women.
All right, I'm not going to indulge this anymore, okay?
No, because you can't take it. You can give it out, Holly, but you can't take it.
Okay, you know who I had sex with?
Who?
President Taft. Mr. President Taft posters. I had sex with him.
You know what, Holly? You weren't even alive with President Taft.
Oh, how do you know?
Because I'm 78 years old, all right? And you are 39.
Sharp as a tack. Yes. Still can do math.
Oh, stop it. Will you stop it? I, you know what? I should come over there and slap you like your mother did.
Come on, let's see. Come on, you want to get up?
Fine. Fine.
Come on.
Fine.
God,
I'm getting up right now. I don't want to ruin my scar. I still have the stitches in it.
Do you want me to put a bandage on it or a scarf? Maybe
I don't.
Scarf
I don't need your pity.
Yeah, I'm not pitying you.
I think you should go. I think you've been here long enough. I think you should go.
You know that when I go, we're gonna have this whole conversation again because you forget. I just don't want to end it so abruptly this time.
I think you should go, Holly. Holly, do not touch me, okay? I gave you your wedding gift. You didn't appreciate it.
I hate it.
You're...
I will go. I will go, okay? I will go.
I know you're outside the door, waiting for me to call you back.
I'm not. I'm leaving.
Oh, you are...
Everything's fading. It's soft.
There. You're there.
What are you doing? Let's come downstairs to the wedding. Come on. Look at you. Let me fix this. All right. Here we go. Look at you.
Are you sure?
Pretty, pretty princess.
Okay. Sure people won't stare.
No, why would people stare? Come on.
My scar.
No, it looks fine. Maybe you should
okay.
put a scarf on it.
That'd be great. I've got one in the drawer.
Oh, fantastic. Oh my god, there is 18 cupcakes in here.
Not that drawer, not that drawer. Second drawer.
Oh, there. Look at this. It matches my dress.
Why didn't you ask me to be a bridesmaid?
Oh, it was Kevin's mom, you know, she
I don't like her.
Me neither.
Yeah, she's...
Ugh. Yuck.
Yes.
Ugh, this is great. Oh,
I
my
look
God.
Good?
Oh.
Hold my hands.
Okay.
I never slept with Kevin. I just said that to get back at you.
Do you know that I think you have dementia?
Okay. Thank you. What did you think of that, Amy?
I thought that was fun. I don't get to experience people kind of being upset with each other so much in scenes, so that was fun.
I love being upset with people
Me
on
too,
stage.
Yeah.
Why are people afraid of doing that?
Just because I think they think they're going to go into denial land, you know?
So what do you tell your students if they get really angry or upset with people? What do you tell them?
I say it's fine to get really angry, but show me your vulnerability at some point.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you think that these characters showed their vulnerability?
Yeah, absolutely.
In what parts?
I think I did when you started talking about Kevin,
mm-hmm.
and I decided I had to eat that cupcake then and there. Also, when I was talking about how much of a chameleon he was in his occupations and how I wasn't good enough.
How did you use the suggestion?
Chameleon.
Okay.
I was watching you.
Okay.
I thought you were chasing a little chameleon at first. But then you reminded me of the patients I used to work with in a hospital.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I started, like, I was just going to be, like, kind of chameleon-like, you know, just kind of, like, nebbishy or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you said something, and then I'm like, okay, now I'm a woman, so I'm just going to go with that. And then I was like, okay, when you asked about the touching the thing, I was like, oh, she's in a wedding dress. You know, maybe I'm not sure. And then you made a really nice move about being in the hospital, which gave us just like this fun thing, total surprise. So that's how I just loved it. I loved it.
Yeah,
I loved
fun.
How we found it. Is there anything you would have done differently?
I probably would have tried. I think I called you a name.
Right.
And then I quickly forgot it, so then I was, like, afraid to call you anything else. So that's why I called you my aunt later on. So remembering your name, I would have said it a bunch of times.
Mm-hmm.
Probably also would have done more with my hand model stuff. I think I got into my head because it was a podcast, so I was like, they won't see me do this, like, delicate hand model kind of stuff. So, yeah, I just didn't do it, and I should have.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah.
Were you, at times I was a little lost in places. Did you feel that at all?
No.
Okay.
Mm-mm.
All right. Great. So let's take some questions and answers from the audience.
Okay.
Okay. So Mark, if you could turn the lights up just a little. Do we have house lights? Well, if not, we'll figure it out. Right here.
Oh, yes, Joe Stempo. So I'm into, I got noted at the UCB all the time for doing physical comedy, for flailing around on stage and doing stuff. They would tell me, stop doing that, it looks hacky, you know, but I did it well, but they still wanted me to stop doing it. So I started infusing flawed object work in my flaws, in my objects. So if a glass, if I was drinking, it would empty before the end of the scene. I would go fill it. If I had a pen, it would run out of ink. If I had to make a call, I wouldn't be able to get service. It would just amp up the emotion in the moment. Like, oh, my God, I need to call 911. My phone isn't working. So I would start losing my mind a little more. Yeah.
Great. Another question? Right here.
Hey.
Hi, Alex.
Do you know everybody in the audience?
I coach both of these guys. Yeah. There's no preference, actually. I'm actually, it just depends on my mood. I love mono scenes. I love the idea of being able to cut too, though. So I love those, like, quick little, like, tag runs and stuff. Yeah.
Great. Another question? Right over here.
Do you have a rule of thumb for, like, editing a scene out, like, what's done? And you, like swipe through or...
A rule. I think you feel it. You know when it's done, you know? I always say leave the audience wanting more, for sure. So you don't want to end on, like, the best joke. I say end kind of in the middle, like, after you've gotten your second nice laugh from the game you're playing. Yeah.
Great. Another question? Right here.
Can you talk about Indie Cage Match and just, like, how you got that started with all the indie teams in New York?
Yeah, I wasn't able to perform all the time, and I knew I wanted other people to be able to do that, so I strategically pitched the show when the ADs were shifting. So
assistant directors at UCB?
Yeah.
Okay.
So when Anthony was leaving and Nate Dern was coming up, I knew that I had maybe a month window to convince him to let me do something. So yeah, I fought for it, and I was like, these kids need notes. These kids, not notes, but they need feedback. They need to be told, like, that doctor scene was great, you know, and just, like, shout-outs to people. So, yeah, he said, at first he said, what a great idea. We'll think about maybe having you run that. And I was like, wait, what? I thought I just pitched that idea to you. So, yeah, I love doing it.
You know, you said something to me that being there at the UCB, you've taken a lot of shit. What's the difference between taking a lot of shit at a place and paying your dues?
Well, I feel like I paid my dues early on, but there's a brand there. So the idea is it's a fear thing for me. If I leave there, then I won't be able to teach as much because no one will know who I am anymore. But that's all in my head. You know, at this point, I feel like I could, but I'm still...
So what is taking shit at a place?
Taking shit is you're constantly being kind of, I don't know, dumped on, not put on teams, not put into shows, not, you know, being thought of for certain things, but you stay around. I mean, but you have to stay around because they want you to be around. Like, I would not be on the performer page if they didn't want me there. So there's a necessary kind of, like, I am a necessary cog for them, especially in the indie world.
What do you add? What is your contribution to UCB?
I get a lot of people out of their head from their rules that they kind of lay on. So 401 to advanced study is my sweet spot. Like, that's what people just want me to get them to pass.
And what kind of things do students say when they come and study with you because they've got 401 and all the rules and all the game in their heads?
I'm so in my head. I'm not having fun anymore. I don't know what game is, or I'm not sure about it. So by the time they leave class, I've hopefully fixed those things.
Now, I'm going to ask you this because I see this in Chicago with students, especially if they're the bigger institutions. There's something sometimes that they get intimidated by the institution,
mm-hmm.
and that drives them in their head. Do you see that, like, just because they walk in the halls of Second City, and now they're scared because they think there's something on the line. They have a lot of pressure. Do you see the same thing with the UCB students?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think you're always going to be intimidated by a place that you want to be a part of. Like, I don't think anyone ever feels truly a part of it there. Like, you know, I know Will Hines did your podcast
yes.
a couple of weeks ago. And him and I had a conversation once where I was just like, I just want to feel a part of it. I want to feel like I'm contributing to this community. And he was like, me too. I'm like, what are you talking about? You run the school.
He's the artistic director of the school, wasn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah. Yeah. And he was like, well, I still don't feel that. So I'm like, well, if he doesn't feel it, then how will I ever feel it? So I was just looking in the wrong place for validation.
Oh, great. Let's take some more questions. Right here.
You touched on this earlier in your conversation before you improvised. You said confidence is a lot of it mm-hmm. in this work. And you said, like, fake it. Is there anything, I'm really terrible with confidence. Is there anything else you can recommend or things that you did that got you to the place where you did find yourself funny and you were able to take compliments on your work and believe in yourself a little more?
Yeah, the simple answer is I enjoyed my journey from the beginning. I think if you think there's an end point to any of this, even when you're super famous, you're wrong. It's like if you're not enjoying the ride, you're never going to have fun. If you're always waiting for the next big thing to happen or you're taking this class and that class to get into a theater, you're never going to be satisfied. Enjoy the ride. All my famous friends say they miss doing theater. So it's like enjoy the ride and also just be you and find people that you gravitate towards and work with them.
Was that something you always had, or was that something that you it started to change for you? Like, I would imagine when you started out, you had SNL in your eyes.
No.
You didn't?
No. Uh-uh. No.
What did you have in your eyes? I want to teach classes?
I was so fast. I came from a weird experimental theater background. So, like, to use my own words and to be able to be funny with it and create whatever, whenever, that to me was the greatest thing. I didn't want to be, I don't like people. Like, this is good.
You don't like people? What
no,
do you mean by that?
I mean, I love people. I just don't like to be in crowds. Like, I get super heavy anxiety on the train. I have to do all these, like, rituals and techniques to, like, calm myself down. Like, I live in New York, and it's like, I can't go outside 90% of the time because I'm afraid of stuff. So this is good because it's a good distance. I know where everybody is.
What kind of stuff are you afraid of?
Everything.
Like, give me an example of a fear of walking out, and what do you think is going to happen to you?
Everything. Death.
Someone's going to kill you? Someone's going to mug you?
Yeah, well, my people that know me, my crazy mantra before I do any improv set, which I did tonight before we did ours, was you're going to leave this building and get hit by a car, and you're going to die, and that's your last improv set you'll ever do, so leave it all on stage.
Oh, my God. I thought I had a dark outlook on life.
Though it's just like
amazingly joyful. I'm just a dark cloud all the time, but you're like, you have, there's parts of your life that are really joyful. You know, you also talked about teaching kindergarten
mm-hmm.
and you stopped doing that because now you're teaching improv full time. Mm-hmm. What did you learn from those kids? Because in terms of improv,
well, I taught filmmaking with kindergartners, so I made movies with them. And what I learned was...
Only in New York.
Only in New York,
with
right?
Kindergartens. Got to get my kid into a film class.
That's right. Right.
You know?
It's crazy. You'd be surprised. Like, I had kids shipped from other schools that would come and take my class. It was like, it wasn't a thing that was around New York, really. So here's what I learned. Adults hate repetition. Kids love it. So I could have a kid do a scene 20 times, and he would just be like...
Dancing along, dancing around.
Yeah, and an adult would roll their eyes like, really? I have to do this again? So I learned that they crave repetition. Autistic kids are the most amazing people to work with for filmmaking because you give them a goal, they do it in one take, they're out. Perfect. So committed. It's like you are a snow dragon. You are in an ice village, you know, and they got a green screen behind them and they're like, yes, and they get so into it. They taught me also how to play a game, you know, because a kid would laugh if I just did one little thing. So I realized that, if I just keep doing this thing, you know, not over and over again, I have to have it rest moments. then they'll laugh. They'll have a good time. It's that easy, you know?
And that stuff, what could you apply to teaching in improv with adults?
Almost everything. Like, I learned to be a better improviser because of those kids. I mean, I don't know. Because I would also teach them improv. I'd be like, to 2 6-year-olds, I'd be like, okay, get into a car. And they would do it. It's like, first of all, they're New Yorkers, so they're not in cars that often, right? They're only in cabs. But they're six. They don't know, like, the way a car works. But they'd open the door. They'd get inside. You know, they'd lower their head to get in. They'd sit. They'd put on the seatbelt. You know, some kids would adjust the mirror. And I'm like, holy crap. You know, because they're just... You just say, you're a pirate, you're a golfer, go. And they would figure it out. They'd be like, oh, I'm a pirate playing golf.
Because I think adults, we think too much.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, I got to be a good golfer, or what a golfer would do. They just go right into it.
Yeah.
Great, let's take some more questions. Right here.
Yes.
Or is that like hamstringing somebody?
No, you can. I think that with UCB especially, you learn a kind of structure. That, I mean, level two, I cried every day because I realized I was not funny anymore. I had to go by this, like, structure.
Who was your teacher?
Level one?
Yeah, no, level
two.
Oh, level two
was Delaney.
And he made you cry?
Every class.
Okay.
Yeah, he knows this, though.
How did he make you cry? Like,
he would... tear me apart. Because I was just a naturally funny human being going to take comedy classes, and they're like, no, you know, like, David Rozowski, like, tore into me in this random workshop I took with him, like, made me get out of my seat and did my scene for me. And I was like, I sent him the most scathing email known to man, where I was just like, that was so wildly inappropriate. Like, I can't believe you did that. I'm a teacher, too. And it was just like...
This was like a couple years ago?
Like 4 years ago.
And what did he respond?
It was like, it was crazy. And we're teaching at Improv Utopia together.
Do you have any tension are you about that?
I'm hoping he, A, doesn't remember. He always says, you probably know him well,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
He does that thing where he's like, we're best friends now, right? So I got one of those at the end of the email where I was like, I think we're okay. I think. But yeah, he was kind of upset. He was upset with my response to him in the email.
So let's answer this guy's question.
Right.
Yes.
Sorry. Yes, you can train someone to be funny. There's lots of very like math-minded guys that come through the UCB that you teach them the structure. They can hit the thing. Are they doing everything? No. Are they like being the best actor? No. Yes, so it's trainable, but you might not be the best.
Who would you say are like great examples of people that have never been trained and are great comedians? And who would you say is a great example of someone that really, that you say, wow, he's followed the technique, blah, 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 blah?
To be honest, I've taught a lot of guys who are like, I've never taken an improv class. And I'm like, you chose. You know, because those people don't know how to work with an ensemble. There's a difference between improv in my mind and being a funny comedian. You have to learn how to work with an ensemble and find joy in building something with somebody. And I think 90% of us improvisers are control freaks. So it's beautiful to have a form because that's a little bit of a control thing we can have. But we also have to be funny. We have to win the show. And that's like so wildly against what ensemble improv is. So every guy that I've ever worked with who are never took a class, I always give them that note. Like, you need to take a class. And they don't like that.
What about the example of somebody who came there, might not have been the funniest person, but followed the method and then did really succeeded?
Yeah, Zach Woods. I mean, I talked about him earlier. He was a 15-year-old kid who wanted to do comedy. He felt weird when we would do indie shows and got stage fright and went and took a class at Atlantic Theater to get that out of his body. And now he's wildly successful, but also because he knows his brand. he knows that he plays the awkward, you know, smart, kind of gawky guy well, and he gets cast in those roles, and it gets better and better each time I see him. I'm like, oh my God, that's what he should be doing. Like Silicon Valley, last time I saw him, I was eating a sandwich, and he was walking by me, and it was a glass wall, and he just knocked on the window and was like, and I'm like sitting there like, other people were like, oh my God, it's that guy. And I'm like pretending like I don't know what's happening with him. Like he's still a super nice, normal guy, but wildly successful and doing great. I feel like I get off topic.
That's all right. That's what the podcast is all about. Another question, right here.
Do you feel that overly harsh or aggressive, teachers are, I guess, borderline abusive, do you feel that that does more harm than good?
Yes. Yeah. I think that you have to, if you're going to give a hard note, it shouldn't be personalized. I got a really hard note in my first year of improv where the girl that was coaching me said, I don't know if you're like this in real life, but if you are, you're despicable. And I was just like, what? So I think that you have to have a good bedside manner, and I think that there's a million teachers out there that are just funny people teaching classes. They don't know how to teach, you know? I want someone to be able to walk away from my notes feeling like, I can now improvise better, not I can now improvise as a snowman going to Mars better. You know, it's like, that's not helpful, you know.
But you said about Mike Delaney that you go back to work with him. So there, yeah. On some level, you appreciate the toughness.
Yeah, I mean, he's tough on me for different reasons. Like, I babysat his boy for years. Like, he's family in my mind. So I go back to get roughed up. You know, just if I'm, you know, resting on my laurels a little bit, I go to him and get roughed up. And he got mad at me the last workshop I took because I left and I was like, I was trying to improvise how you wanted me to. And he was like, don't say that, garlic, just improvise like you. And I'm like, no, because every time I do, you say, I'm not going to give you notes on that because you were just playing a retarded child. Like, he thinks all of my children have some kind of special need where I'm just like, that what? I work with kids. This is a kid. It's a normal, not super genius smart kid like your kid.
How do you take all that? I mean, you've been around for a long time. How do you still take the criticism or feedback? I am so freaking fragile. I mean, I that would be really hard. It seems like part of you kind of like welcomes this.
Yeah, I want to get notes because no one notes me anymore. I don't go to rehearsals where I have a coach that, like, notes me. I want to go take these workshops to get notes.
And when you get these harsh notes, then how do you leave? How do you feel when you leave?
I feel like either my brand is stronger, that I know myself better, or I say to myself, that's a new thing to work on.
You don't go, like, I want to kill myself, my life is over? That's where I go.
No. On an improv scene? Dude, just commit your suicide in an improv scene.
I make it way too important. Way too important. All right, we had another question. Right here.
Sure. On the topic of brand,
would
you talk about Pirate Robot Ninja?
Oh, my gosh.
What is Pirate Robot Ninja?
I can, but I feel bad because it's not mine. I mean, I could talk about it quickly. It's something that Billy Merritt kind of brought to the UCB as, like, an idea of how to categorize people as improvisers. So I think it was more for, like, oh, you know, Herald auditions, they would flip over people's pictures and be like, well, we can't put 8 pirates on a team. Got to fill in with some robots. Basic idea is if you're a pirate, you attack scenes. You don't really care. You're just like going with it, having a good time. If you're a robot, you kind of like stand, listen, assess the situation, and then give a line back being like, this is the game. We are doing the game. And a ninja is someone that does a lot of like volley moves, like a lot of like, this will be important later, walk-ons, you know. I always use Matt Besser as a good example because he can still have a self-contained walk-on that's still funny. And if it never gets used, never gets used. But it's like playing chess if you're a ninja. You put 6 moves ahead, you're a ninja. You want to have all 3 of them combined to be the perfect improviser. But we're all at different levels at different points in our lives.
Great. Another question? Right, one back here. Who is your hero, your improv hero?
That's my group Fart Police asking me that. If I could play like anyone that I've seen actually do live improv, it would be Tina Fey. I think she blew my mind when I watched her do improv. Maybe more because I wasn't expecting it. I was like, hey, she's a writer. But I saw her do improv and I was like, holy crap, she's good. She would be that. And people I've never seen, probably like if Buster Keaton did improv. Like, that's who I'd want to
do. Do you have any story about Tina Fey?
Not really. Tina and I didn't have, she kind of like, the only time I really like saw her was Ass Cat. She was always like kind of like coming in real quick, back door kind of thing and leaving. Not too interesting. We never had any like real contact with each other.
But Amy, you when was the last time you ran into Amy Poehler? The thing I always found about Amy Poehler was, because I knew her from Chicago, she always remembers your name and she's always happy to see you.
Yes. Always remembers my name, yeah. Not only does she, because we have the same name, yeah, obviously. But she always remembers my last name. People usually call me by my last name.
She would say Jimmy Corain, yeah. You know?
Yeah, she called me girl.
And I think that's one of the reasons she's, besides she's hugely talented, there's a warmness about her, and she remembers people.
It's like a teacher. You got to remember your students' names.
I wish I could.
Really?
I have the hardest time remembering. We had another question in the back. Right here.
Oh, yeah.
What was that question?
So we serve at the Del Close Marathon every year. Kronf serves breakfast to the entire audience, and then we do an improv show. So it started because it was in 2003, and it was the second Del Close Marathon they ever had, and we were on at, like, 4 in the morning. So, and there was only, like, 30 shows. So we were like, oh, we got to get people out. Let's serve them breakfast. So we made breakfast. Bad idea, like made in like these dingy little apartments. We were just making.
What
like,
did you make? Like eggs,
bacon, eggs,
like a
toast.
Breakfast you'd get at like Embassy Suites,
yeah.
Hotel.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right.
And now it's massive. People that come to it now, it gets catered by the UCB. The UCB actually pays for it, but it's about 400.
Don't ever tell me you didn't make a contribution.
What do you mean? We did.
That's what I'm saying. The UCB embraced your idea,
right.
And now they're catering it.
Yes, yeah, they pay
there
for
is,
it.
There it is.
Yeah, 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 yeah. We paid for like 10 years. We paid like,
okay,
it took, I paid like $4,000. Yeah, yeah.
Save your receipts. All right. another question? Yes, right here.
What happens when breakfast is late?
Oh, you mean like this past year?
Breakfast was late?
Yes. Anytime there's been a problem with Kronf Breakfast Guides, it's because I decided that year I wasn't going to deal with it. I usually am the one who handles it, like coordinating and stuff like that. So the past 2 years, they have definitely said to me, we got this, girl. Like, don't worry. We got this. And this past year, they went to Bagel Maven 10 minutes too late. I told them they closed at 6. They went at 6:10. And then the place we usually get it from just kind of screwed us over this year. So, yeah, this year we had this massive, like, meme thing happening in Twitter happening where people were like, what was it? It was like, where's my breakfast? Oh, one of my teammates said, go into this deli with a bunch of stuff, put it on the counter and say, where's my breakfast? And just walk out. And I think like 20 people did that. Yeah.
I'm surprised there wasn't a riot in New York.
That's
it.
No.
Yeah. As you get older, you know, improv is a young person's game. How are you staying relevant?
Looking so young. I stay relevant with doing stuff like Indie Cage Match. I want to know who's coming up. I want to know who's hungry for improv. If I see you every month on an indie team, I know you really want to be seen. I want people to know that I have some kind of stake in helping you progress in the community. And then those people are like, hey, maybe I'll take a class with this girl. It's half the price of a UCB class. Why not? That's why I stay relevant.
The cage match, they give notes at the end.
No notes. We just say what we loved about it. We tried notes. Bad idea.
Well, how'd that go?
Bad.
In terms of what? What happened? Tell me.
I had friends of mine that I was having to give notes to.
So you're giving notes in front of the audience, basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
In front of like 110 people.
And you're pointing out what they did wrong, basically.
Yeah, or like things we would have liked to see happen. So after two shows, we can that.
What did your friends? They left messages on your machine or
I had a friend that
stopped talking to you?
Yeah, I had a friend that didn't really talk to me for a long time, and then he randomly was like, you didn't need to give me notes. I don't need notes from my peers. And I was like, okay. Sorry.
So then you decided we're just going to say the positive stuff?
Yeah, and I think that's smart. That was smart. Yeah.
And do you think that's too inside baseball for an audience to get?
I think that's part of it. It's just like, who's going to know what I'm talking about when I'm like, that swinging door was crazy. You should have been doing ghosting at that point.
And does the audience appreciate, like, oh, the good stuff? Because the audience is a lot of improvisers?
Yeah, I think that the audience likes to hear that what they thought was funny was technically funny from our point of view as teachers.
So if you looked at our scene, what would you have said if we were in a cage match?
All kinds of stuff. I would have said, what an interesting location. Because in my mind, we were in the hospital, but then somehow my wedding reception was also there. So it's like, I really cared for you. I was like, I have to move my wedding to this hospital and do it in the lobby. So I would have said, that was interesting. You were interesting. The fact that you played this really interesting woman. I loved that twist of fate at the end when I'm just like, oh, in my mind, she has dementia. You know, I felt like I set it up. And I'm like, great, we get to go back and repeat the exact same scene, you know. And then when you had that moment of being like, I never slept with him, I was like, she's been duping me, you know, which was also cute because I was like, oh, she just wants to spend time with me.
So if you had to give the harsh notes.
Harsh notes?
Yeah, on that scene.
I would have given me notes. I would have been like, what was her name? What happened with the hand model thing? Why even bring it up? Stuff like that.
This has been great. We got to wrap this up.
You're
great. Is really fun. Is there any secrets or something that you didn't get a chance to reveal? Anybody else's body parts that you want to share?
Secrets? Not so much. I think that why I stick around is because I don't reveal too much. So I think I'll keep it inside of me. Just a little bit longer.
Is your boyfriend, do you tell him stuff?
Zach? Sure, yeah.
You say, oh, so-and-so said to me this, and I, you know, because you're not holding everybody's secrets, right?
Yeah, no, we rap about stuff all the time on our couch. We'll talk about it. He'll let me, but we also have time limits. Like, we get on kicks. Like, he'll be hate someone for so long and talk about him. I'll be like, your time is up talking about this person. You're 10 minutes. So we have a new person in our life that we talk about, which, yeah, you know who I'm talking about, Fart Police.
This person drives you nuts?
This person is going outer limits, and now I have a two-minute. I can only do two. I even texted him something before then. He was like, your time is up. Go do your podcast.
Like, oh. Does that help your relationship?
Yeah, yeah.
Setting those kind of boundaries?
Yeah, yeah. Like, never in bed, never, like, once we go to sleep in our bedroom, no more improv.
And is he an improviser?
Yes, he is, yeah.
And what is that? Does that work, two improvisers?
Yeah, it's so fun. He started doing improv only, like, 3 years ago.
How'd you guys meet?
We met because I taught his team online. I teach improv teams online sometimes. So they were all in someone's living room doing improv sets, and I would give them notes. And
did you flirt
up
with him online? Can you?
I hadn't dated anyone in like 3 years.
Why? What happened?
I had nothing, really.
Okay.
I just, I was over it and didn't want to do it. And the screen popped up, and I was immediately like, well, hello there. Hi. And I hadn't even been attracted to anyone in three years. So I'm like, I'm seeing this like foggy, grainy, pixelated man. I'm like, that's who I want.
Because I always thought, you know, like when I started out, this is back in the 80s, it's like if you had one, and I've said this a million times on this podcast, if you had one woman on the team, it was a big deal. And I always felt bad for the women then because it was so hard to date, you know? Has it changed?
Oh, yeah. I think, like, everybody wanted to date me. In my mind, everybody did. No, but I think it was, at UCB, it was so wildly easy. I was, like, one of eight girls for a really long time. It became harder, I think, when more attractive women came into the theater.
You don't think of yourself as pretty?
No.
Really?
Uh-uh.
At all?
I think if I'm in resting face... I think I can look attractive.
Can I say this? I don't know if this is public, you know. There's a sexuality about you.
Oh, yeah? Sexy?
Yeah. I think you're really sexy. Do you,
thank you.
Do you feel that?
People tell me that all the time, and I'm always like taken aback by it. Like, really? Why? What makes me? Maybe I think it's my comfortability, my invitingness.
There's a tremendous sexuality to you.
Oh, thank you. I guess, right?
Yes.
It's a compliment.
Yeah, I guess it's a compliment. I think it's a compliment. I'll take it. Okay.
Oh, God. Made me blush.
Is it? So we got to wrap this up. This has just been a blast. We could actually talk for 3 more hours, but we're at a festival. So
what?
Yeah, so we've got to keep going. What one piece of advice would you give an improviser starting out today?
God, I would hate to repeat myself, but I think it's the same thing I said to Kristen. Enjoy the journey. Like, even if you're doing it to become famous, enjoy every moment of getting there. Don't like, yes, have a goal. Have a 2-year plan. Have a 5-year plan. But don't, if you don't hit those marks, don't freak out and just run away to Missouri.
But what do you say to people that is like, oh, I started out in the class and then they got on a Herald team and I didn't get on a Herald team? What do you say to those people?
I said, why do you care about these goddamn people? It's you.
But it was my class. We all were in the same class together and 8
so
people got on a Herald team.
So maybe you're not as funny as them. Maybe you're not as trained. Maybe you're not as disciplined. What do you do every day to make yourself better? You know, do you?
I've got a day job. I work 40 hours a week.
So wake up at 4 a.m. and go through the news and write 10 jokes that you would be able to send to SNL for a weekend update. Make $75 each joke if you get them in.
I don't want to work that hard.
Well, me neither. That's why I'm never going to be famous.
Is that true?
Right, yeah.
Because you don't want to work that hard?
There's no way I would want to work as hard as my friends that do work so hard.
Your famous friends, how hard do they work? Because I don't think people realize it.
So much. So much. I mean, so
Who's
much.
Who's one of your famous friends?
Casey Wilson.
Okay. And how hard does...
She's worked so hard.
And what does she do?
Well, right now she's on Marry Me, I think. But she was on SNL. She was fired from SNL. And she just worked so hard. She did sketch shows, and she would run around the city and do all these things. So she moved to LA, and she was in this and that. It's like someone like Shashir, who's
Shashir who?
Shashir Zamata that just got on SNL.
Okay.
That girl, every day she was doing a mic. Every day she was doing a hosting bit. Like a web series would come out, and she'd be in it. It was just like, how do you find time? I can't imagine.
Amy Gorlich, thank you so much for being our guest on Improv Nerd. Give it up for Amy.
And there you have it. Another episode of Improv Nerd is in the can. And I want to thank our guest today, Amy Gorlich. And I want to also thank her for getting me out of my comfort zone. Anytime I can play like an old woman in an improv scene, I really have a lot of gratitude for that. I also want to thank Ryan Hill at the Steel Stacks Improv Comedy Festival for bringing me to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania to be a part of the 2015 festival there. I had a great time. I'd also like to thank my producer, Dan Schiffmacher. He's the one who makes me sound so slick and so professional. You wouldn't be hearing my voice right now if it wasn't for Dan. Also, me, Jimmy Corain, the host of Improv Nerd, has a website, jimmycorain.com. Go and check out my classes, The Art of Slow Comedy. Also, sign up for the Improv Nerd newsletter. Each week, I will send you out a improv blog that will make you a better improviser and a better person. Well, the better person is up to you. Also, follow us on social media. Start with our Facebook page, our Improv Nerd Facebook page, and like us. It really helps with my low self-esteem. Then follow us over to Twitter at improv_nerd, and then check out our Improv Nerd YouTube channel. We're also lucky enough to be on feralaudio.com. Feralaudio.com is a podcast collective. People like Chelsea Peretti and Dan Harmon and Steve Agee and Todd Barry all have the most unique and hilarious podcasts out there. So check that out, feralaudio.com. I want to thank our sponsors today. National Improv Network, so check them out at nationalimprovnetwork.com, and the Charm City Comedy Festival. Check them out at charmcitycomedyfestival.com. And thank you for listening, and until next time, remember, walk, don't run.
Hello, I'm Kyle Ayers. I'm the host of Never Seen It, the podcast where comedians rewrite famous movies and TV shows they've never seen, and then we give them a read in studio. This is a clip I want to play for you guys from an episode where Langston Kerman rewrites Scarface. He's never seen it, but he wrote a script based on what he thinks he knows about it. And here's a clip. Give it a listen.
All right. Scarface, The New Frontier. Interior, happening discotheque. Remember when we called clubs discotheques? LOL. The 70s were crazy. Night. The crowd bustles with young, hot Mexicans who are supposed to be Cuban and all are dressed in butterfly collared shirts and pants that look like JNCO jeans and pleated khakis had a really weird baby. There's sex in the air and Poppy wants a whiff.
Oh my God.
Scarface, 22 to 45.
Like he's a television audience demographic.
Devilishly handsome, not even a little bit Italian looking, so get that out of your dumb brain. Walks through the crowd with the confidence of a man who's going on MTV Cribs with the Ying Yang Twins one day. Does he actually have a scar on his face? Fuck no. Why would you even ask that? That's not important. What's important is that he is not at all a problematic stereotype and that he has come for his cocaine. As he approaches the red rope of the VIP, pronounced ve a pay in Spanish,
oh my God.
He spots his dear friend, who is almost certainly going to become his enemy by the end of the film, Smooth Skin. Scarface yells out his signature line.
Ciao, Bella. It's me, Scarface.
Oh, my God.